Hi, I'm Richard, the founder of 10 Adventures, and this is the 10 Adventures podcast. Each week, we talk to real people about real adventures as they explore this incredible planet we all live on.
So welcome to the 10 Adventures podcast today. I'm super excited to talk to Michelle Latourneau today. She's one of our community contributors at 10 Adventures, and she responded to our search for community members who had really inspiring and exciting trips and explorations to talk to us about. And Michelle, over the last number of years, has been out exploring in Africa and South America, is going to tell us a bit about all the different wildlife exploration that she's done, in particular primates, which I'm like so excited to hear about, because I've always wanted to go look and see gorillas and things like that. So Michelle, why don't you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Michelle. I live here in Calgary, Alberta, and I'm just someone who really enjoys traveling whenever I get the chance.
And you've been to many different destinations over the years.
Yes, I have. Yeah, I've been really fortunate to be able to go to Africa a couple times, and I've been to Southeast Asia, and recently was in South America visiting the Galapagos. So yeah, it's been really amazing.
And so today you're going to tell us a bit about the animal viewing that you've done, and you did several different trips doing that. And I was kind of wondering what inspired you to do those trips in particular.
I guess a couple of the trips I will talk about today is the gorilla and chimpanzee trekking I did, along with the lemur trekking. So I'm someone who really enjoys traveling that kind of revolves around the outdoors and wildlife, and the gorillas are something that I've always wanted to do. It's kind of always been a bucket list item. So I was able to make that happen a couple of years ago and was just like really excited about it.
So tell us what kind of preparation you had to do to go see the gorillas and the chimps.
Yeah, so I did it with a tour operator. So fortunately, they kind of had everything organized for me. So I did do some research in terms of kind of reading different blogs and that kind of stuff to kind of see what I would be getting myself into. In terms of, I guess, the physical preparation for it, I didn't necessarily do any of that. I do hike a lot when I'm at home in the summer months. So I would say I'm in decent hiking shape. So I kind of knew going into it that there would be trekking and hiking involved. So I guess I was kind of prepared for that. But of course, every trip is different. I know at least in our group, there were some groups that were hiking for way more hours than what we were. So, you know, it can look a bit different depending on the terrain you have to go to see to find your gorilla family.
As far as the trip, because I don't know the details of any of these kind of trips, are you kind of plunked right in there in prime gorilla habitat, or do you actually have to trek into the jungle just to even get close to where your starting point would be?
Yeah, so the trip started off in Kigali, Uganda, and then that's kind of where we all met. And then from there, we took a very long bus ride kind of close to the impenetrable forest, which is where the gorillas live. So I think we drove for maybe 8 hours or something. And then from there, we actually camped kind of just outside the jungle overnight. And then in the morning is when you meet with the trackers and the other groups, and you actually get split off into smaller groups. So only 6 people are allowed to visit one gorilla family at a time, and you're only allowed to spend 1 hour with them. That way it just kind of keeps them wild, so they're not, you know, so used to humans. And then from there, you actually start your trek in the jungle. So it is exactly as you think it would be. The jungle is quite thick. The trackers do come with machetes to try and, you know, cut the vegetation out of the way. And the trackers all actually meet early in the morning, so they kind of know where each of the families are roughly in the park, and they will be communicating with each other in terms of how far you have to trek into the jungle and, you know, whether they're close or not. So as we were kind of trekking through, our guides were in contact, you know, via walkie-talkie with the trackers that were closer to the families and letting us know if we were closer or if the family was on the move. There were some moments where, you know, we had to kind of stop and stay where we were for a bit because the family was moving in a different direction and they needed to make sure that they took us on the right path. And this wasn't like normal hiking. So we did start off by following a clear path. And then all of a sudden we veered left right into the jungle where you would think that there's no path there. And we were, you know, avoiding different kinds of branches and that kind of stuff. So that was super adventurous. Doing that until we came upon the family that, you know, eventually was right in front of our eyes on the path.
So how long were you, do you feel like you were trekking from your camp before you saw your first gorilla family?
Yeah, I think my group was trekking for maybe a couple hours, which was actually on the shorter end of it when we kind of met back with the rest of the group. So we potentially got lucky that we, you know, we weren't trekking for hours and hours and hours. But like I said, of course, it's different with every time you go see them.
Right. And so when you come across your first gorilla family, like, how are you feeling?
Yeah, it was honestly incredible. I felt like my heart was racing because the very first gorilla that I saw when we came up on the path was the giant male silverback just sitting right there in front of you. And it was just crazy to see them in person. I mean, I've seen them at the zoo before, but of course there's always the barrier there. So to see them right in front of you where there's, you know, nothing separating you and the gorillas was just completely surreal. And then, you know, the other family members kind of came down from the hills, including a newborn baby that was, you know, sitting with his mom, which was super adorable. And yeah, the most special thing was, you know, at one point they were just walking right in front of us and, you know, you look into their eyes and there's just so much human familiarity there. It's almost eerie and cool in a way because they look so much like us.
So when you first see that huge male silverback gorilla, is there a part of you that's scared?
A little, I guess, just because you never know, right? If they feel intimidated or threatened, of course, they could come at you. I think I was just so excited to be seeing them there that any fear I had kind of dissipated. Of course, the guides are there making sure, you know, you're kept safe and you do have to keep an appropriate distance, but they are massive. Like, he was huge. He could definitely probably do some damage, you know, if he did in fact feel threatened. But I would not say that I felt scared, but I think, you know, some people definitely could.
From what you're saying, it sounds more like you were thrilled as opposed to scared, and thrilled and excited. I can even see it in your face, because though the listeners won't be able to see your face, I can today. And you just have the biggest smile on your face. So it seems like that was a pretty amazing experience. I was wondering, though, how then when, you know, you see them, you have this surge of emotion, and then how do they respond to you?
They were quite calm, I would say. So part of it is these gorilla families go through a process of habituation. So very, very slowly, the trackers kind of gain their trust and get them used to the presence of humans, just because they are territorial, so they don't want to bring people to them. And then the gorillas are then feel threatened and want to attack to protect their territory. So it is a very slow, gradual process in terms of getting these families ready for people to actually be able to come see them in their natural habitat. So normally by the time that people like myself and other tourists come to see them, they are used to the presence of humans. So I wouldn't say that they feel threatened, but once you're there, you're told, no sudden movements, don't move. If the gorillas start to come towards you, you need to stay very still. So there was one point where we were kind of all gathered and the gorillas kept coming down the hill and the mom and her baby walked right in front of us. I mean, if we had reached out to touch one of them, we could have. Of course, we did not. So I guess in those moments, you know, you realize how big of creatures that they are. And, you know, maybe my heart was going a little bit faster, but for the most part, I would say the gorillas seemed to be quite calm and not threatened by us at all. They kind of just went about their normal business.
And did they interact with you at all, or did they more kind of see you but ignore you?
Yeah, in my case, they kind of more just saw us and ignored us. There was another group when they came back, they said that there was a mischievous little baby gorilla that actually ended up taking the jacket of one of the girls that was there and kind of ran off with it. So they definitely can, in some instances, interact more so with the group. I think our family was just a little bit more calm and kind of just observed us. And, you know, there wasn't as much interaction there.
I guess if you lost your jacket to a baby gorilla, you wouldn't feel too bad about that. You'd kind of be, oh, yay, I lost my jacket. A gorilla stole it.
No, not at all. It makes for a good story.
So how many days did you spend going out into the jungle to see gorillas?
Yeah, so my trip in total to Uganda was 10 days. So only one of those days was the actual gorilla trekking itself. And then in that same trip, actually the next day, I believe it was, we went to go do the chimpanzee trekking. So I guess there was 2 days in total of trekking. And then we did other things like we visited this really pretty lake, and there was a couple travel days in between there. Yeah, so I guess, like I said, 2 days were probably involved with the actual trekking to see the wildlife.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't realize that you could see chimps and gorillas in kind of the same area in Uganda, which makes that like, wow, that's an amazing trip if you get to see all of that.
Yeah, it was amazing. We did drive to kind of another park to see the chimpanzees. So they weren't necessarily right beside each other, but they were absolutely close enough that I was able to see both groups of primates in the same trip, which was amazing.
And so when you were going to see the chimps, is that a different experience than the gorillas?
It was similar in terms of the trekking. I would say the trekking wasn't as intense through the deep, thick jungle as it was with the gorillas. So with the chimpanzee trekking, we were able to follow a clear path the whole time. And I think we were only hiking for maybe about an hour. So it definitely wasn't as long as the gorillas, just because I think where the gorillas are, the jungle is a lot thicker and it's, you know, a little bit harder to track the families. So we were hiking for maybe about an hour to find the chimps. We could actually hear them off in the distance. So that's kind of how we knew that we were getting closer.
That must just be an amazing sound.
It was deafening. Once we were up close to them, they were right above us in the trees. So we were able to watch them kind of play around. And at one point, a couple of the chimps were getting into a bit of a brawl. So things got really, really loud. It was crazy how loud that they can be.
And were they similar to the gorillas in that they were kind of used to humans and kind of ignored you? Or did you feel any differently when you were around them?
Yeah, so the chimps go through kind of the same habituation process as of the gorillas, so that, you know, they kind of are used to human presence, so they don't feel threatened. In our case, the family was up in the trees the whole time, so they never came down. So they definitely didn't feel threatened by us at all. And it's the same situation with the gorillas. You're only allowed to be there with them for an hour so that you can kind of leave them alone and let them do their own thing.
Right. And so you said your whole trip was about 10 days. Where were you staying while you were doing this?
Yeah, so this trip that I did was an overland trip. So I was actually staying in a tent the whole time, which was really exciting to kind of stay in that kind of an accommodation, near the jungle. It was really exciting because you could kind of hear the noises throughout the night. And, you know, it was just very basic accommodation.
And did you worry about camping out in the jungle?
No, I didn't. I feel like I'm a pretty adventurous person to begin with. So it was kind of more of an exciting prospect of, you know, camping there close to where the animals are. And of course, you know, there's the guides and stuff that are around to kind of make sure that nothing too dangerous makes its way into the campsite.
That sounds good. You know, it's funny you mentioned that years and years and years ago, I went to Africa and we were doing a camping safari in the Serengeti. And I remember one morning it was dawn, like it was around 5 a.m. And we're in our little tents and we hear the guide and driver, talking really loudly. And then they're getting in the car and driving around. And we're like, this is crazy. We aren't getting going for a few hours. Why would they do this? And then we found out, they were doing it on purpose because there was a lion walking through the camp. So then we're like, okay, don't doubt their knowledge or what they're doing. They know a lot more about this than we do.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing.
Well, it sounds like that was just an epic trip. I was wondering what kind of fitness you needed to do that kind of trekking, because it sounds like what you're describing, the jungle's really dense in some ways, and sometimes that can be pretty challenging.
For sure, yeah. So I think as long as, you know, you're mobile, you're able to do it. They do offer porters to help carry your bag if, you know, you need the extra help because you are carrying, you know, a couple liters of water and food. And like I had said before, you really have no idea how long you could be out there. It could be as short as a couple hours, or you could be out there 8 hours hiking around. So I think as long as you have somewhat of a basic level of fitness, you could be okay. They do also give you walking sticks, which did help because some of the terrain is uneven. They do their best to try and clear a path for you with their machetes, like I said, but of course, like, you do have to watch your footing. So I think if maybe someone had a knee injury or something, they might want to bring their knee brace just because the ground is a little bit uneven. But as long as you're able to kind of go for a walk around, then it should be okay. I wouldn't say that it was a super intense, vigorous hike, but it definitely was more of an intense hike than what maybe we're used to on the hiking trails here, where there's a very clear-cut path.
So you're not making quick progress, I would bet. No. So when you look back on that trip, when you were seeing the gorillas and the chimps, is there one memory that really sticks out for you? Is there like a photo in your mind or a video in your mind that when you think of that trip?
Yeah, I think maybe just seeing the gorillas for the very first time, especially in one moment where there was the mom and her baby right close to her. And they, at that point, they were very close to us and you could see the baby so clear. And we were told that the baby was brand new. I think it was one of the youngest gorillas that they kind of had in the park at that time. And just kind of seeing her there with her baby so close in person, kind of that memory or that image is kind of etched in my memory, just kind of staring at the two of them there with, you know, nothing separating us.
Yeah, I could see how that would be something that would really stick with you. And it also sounds like you were relatively very close, so.
Yeah, we really were.
Yeah, sounds epic. You didn't only do gorillas and chimps. There were other monkeys or primates, I'm not sure if that's the right word, that you went and saw, because you had a different trip where you went to Madagascar to see lemurs.
Yes, that's right.
So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so this was back in 2017. I went to Madagascar. It was actually the very first country that I visited on. So I had spent almost 2 months kind of backpacking through Africa. So that was the first stop on the itinerary. So I was there for, it was a fairly short trip. So I was there for about 5 days. And through that time, we did trekking again, kind of similar to what we did with the gorillas and chimps, where each day we would go out on a hike and kind of see what lemurs we could find.
Now, Madagascar isn't as popular a place to visit as other places in Africa. So, but you said that was almost the first place you ended up. So why there? Like, how did you end up there?
I feel like I'm always someone that's kind of drawn to countries and regions that aren't as popular and are kind of more unknown. So that's why Madagascar was kind of always a more unique country to me that I wanted to go visit. And I will say I did grow up watching the Krat Brothers and Zaboomafoo. So it was that small part of me that kind of always wanted to go over there myself and see the lemurs.
Wow. So tell me what a typical day visiting the lemurs was like.
So normally, again, we kind of stayed quite close to the jungle in like a little lodge. So the day would normally start off by having breakfast in the lodge early in the morning, maybe around 7 o'clock in the morning. And then 8 o'clock, we would head out to the jungle and start our trek. Usually we would do one trek in the morning and then our guide would take us to a local spot to have lunch. And then in the afternoon, we would go to a different part of the forest and do a different hike. And yeah, just see what kind of lemurs were out there ready for us to find.
And did you find a lot?
Yeah, we did. So we saw quite a few different species. I know one of the species was the Indri lemur, ruffed lemur, I think, brown lemur, a couple other ones that I can't remember now the names of them. And also on the trip, there was this little island that they called Lemur Island. So basically what happens is you go over to the island and the guides will give you a bunch of bananas, and there was tons of different kinds of lemurs on there, and they would come right over to you, of course, take the bananas from you. So that was pretty crazy, having lemurs from every which way, you know, jumping on your shoulder and taking your bananas and stuff. So yeah, it was quite an experience.
Yeah, that would feel amazing if you have like a lemurs jumping on your shoulders. Oh my goodness. You know, I've seen pictures of lemurs, but like how big are they?
They're quite big, some of them. So the brown lemurs were definitely smaller. Those ones were the most brave, of course. They would push the other lemurs out of the way to get the bananas. But the rough lemurs were, I mean, it's hard to tell, I guess, here on the camera, but they were quite big. Like
if you compared them to a dog, what kind of dog would they be similar to?
That's a good question.
Or another animal. Is there another animal you can think?
Yeah. Maybe like a raccoon.
Oh, okay. That's pretty big then.
Yeah. So when the bigger guys would kind of jump on your shoulder and crawling around, they were quite heavy, I will say, for sure. I would say about the size of a raccoon, some of them. Of course, some of the other breeds were smaller, but the biggest ones we saw, yeah, were probably about the size of a raccoon.
And they're friendly.
They were, yeah, they were actually very friendly. I was kind of nervous, you know, when they're jumping on you, you kind of are sitting there like not moving. But yeah, they didn't bite, so that was good.
And had you heard any stories of them biting?
No, I hadn't. And it's funny because usually I like to read different blogs and stuff like before I go to somewhere new. But because Madagascar, I think, is so, it's not a very well-traveled country, there wasn't really much information out there, especially this Lemur Island experience. So lucky for me, they did not bite. So anybody out there that's wondering.
Well, that's good to hear. And obviously there would have been other people with you and none of them had got bit because you would have heard about that as well.
Exactly.
And so from that trip, is there one specific memory that's etched in your mind?
Yeah, for sure. I think kind of one of the biggest memories was one of these treks that we were doing where we were hiking through looking for lemurs. And I remember our guide was telling us, oh, you'll be able to feed one of them. And this was outside Lemur Island. Of course, the lemurs on Lemur Island are a lot more used to humans because you go in there with bananas and that kind of thing. But this was, we were out in the jungle away from, you know, the lemurs that were more used to humans. And I remember thinking, there's no way I heard that wrong. Like, we're not going to be able to feed a lemur. And maybe she was talking about the lemurs back on Lemur Island. But anyways, we were walking through and we came across this other guy, like another tracker in the forest. And he had these eucalyptus leaves and he kept kind of wiggling them and showing them up in the trees because there was these Indri lemurs up there. And our guide again was like, he's going to have them come down, you know, to the ground level, because normally, of course, they spend most of their time like high up in the trees. And again, I'm thinking there's no way. And eventually he got this one lemur to come down to a branch on a tree close enough to where we were able to hand feed it these eucalyptus leaves. And I think it was just an amazing memory because this was a lemur that was truly wild. It wasn't one that was used to being fed bananas every day. And I think I knew it was special because our guide and then another guide, so there's actually three guides there at the time, the other two were getting really excited to the point where they were taking pictures of what was happening. And I think in those cases, when the guides are getting excited about something, you know it's a unique, special moment because they're there in the forest every day with these animals. You know, they constantly see them and stuff. So if they're getting excited about a moment, you probably know it's a rare thing.
That sounds amazing. I want to go see lemurs and I want to see gorillas and chimps. Oh, it sounds like so much fun. Now, you were also mentioning that you did another trip more recently to the Galapagos.
Yes, I did.
So you're a real wildlife aficionado.
I guess so. Yeah. I do enjoy wildlife trips.
So what made you want to do that trip?
The Galapagos, again, was kind of one of those bucket list trips that I have wanted to do for a while and kind of wasn't sure when I would be able to make that happen. And then I had a friend who was organizing a trip there. And when she told me about it, I knew I had to go. So, of course, you know, things were a little bit uncertain in these times. So I actually only booked my flight, I think, less than 2 weeks before I was set to leave. So it kind of was very last minute, which made things a little bit more exciting.
Because you did it during the pandemic, right?
I did, yeah. So I just did it at the end of September this year. So just a few months ago.
Wow. So that's pretty amazing because obviously people are a bit more tentative about big trips during the pandemic, but you're fearless. Onward you went.
Yeah, it was a little scary. Just, you know, of course, things are constantly changing. And I think even the Galapagos themselves had only recently opened up to accept tourists again. So I think we were kind of one of the first groups to go back out there. So it was a really special time to go out there when there's not as many tourists and stuff around. And you really, I mean, we felt like we had it, the whole islands to ourselves, basically.
Wow, that would be an epic experience. Now, I understand there's different ways to see the Galapagos. Some people will do it kind of from the land where they're staying at different islands or just one island. And I did that a few years ago. But then I know there's other people that will see Galapagos from a boat and do it as part of a cruise. So did you do one or the other or both?
Yeah, so I actually did an 8-day cruise. So with the cruise, it was really nice because I think you're able to see some of the islands that perhaps you're not able to see from the land just because it takes a while to get to them and they're not as accessible because they are uninhabited. So the nice thing about doing it via cruise was you did all your navigation at night, which made for very rocky sleeps. But then you would wake up, open the door of your room, and there would be a new island just outside waiting for you to go visit.
And were the islands quite different when you went from island to island?
They were. I think that's the thing that surprised me the most is just how vastly different they were from one another. So even sometimes in the span of one day, we would visit one island in the morning that had, you know, the white sand, the turquoise blue water, and then in the afternoon, we would go to a different island that was just completely formed of volcanic lava, and it was just black everywhere, and the beach was a bit rockier. So, yeah, they definitely were very different from one another. It didn't feel like once you had seen one island, you had seen them all, because even the animals that lived on each island were so different.
So what kind of animals were you seeing on that trip?
Yeah, so on the islands, we saw, of course, a ton of lizards and reptiles. There was another island where we saw all different species of birds. I mean, I have never seen so many birds in my entire life. And then, of course, we did several snorkels each day, and we saw everything from sea turtles to spotted eagle rays, golden rays. We were snorkeling with the sea lions, tons of fish, even hammerhead sharks we got to snorkel with on our very last snorkel, which was incredible.
I bet. And turtles?
Tons. So many sea turtles. Yeah.
Yeah. You always see pictures on social media of people swimming with sea turtles. So it seems like a standard almost for in the Galapagos.
It was. Yeah. Yeah. Every day we saw turtles.
I remember being really shocked when I was down there that the Galapagos had their own special type of penguin. Did you run into that?
We did. Yeah, I think we actually got really lucky because we were told that we might not see them on this trip because I did the northern, southern, and eastern islands. And I know the penguins that they have there prefer the western islands. You know, none of us had our fingers crossed really that we were going to see the penguins just because, you know, they're not in that area as much. But we actually got really lucky. And yeah, we saw a little group of them. There was a couple of them there kind of swimming around. So that was really fun to see because I think they're the only species of penguin to live north of the equator.
Yeah, it was. I know for us, we were snorkeling one day and there was one of these penguins on a little rock. And like we could snorkel up right beside the rock and the penguin was just there. And then, of course, our tour guide had a waterproof camera, so we all have photos with us right beside this penguin in the tropics. It was kind of surreal, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so crazy at all these animals that, you know, you're just able to snorkel with, swim with, that are right there, especially the penguins too. I mean, that's really the only place you can do that.
Yeah, exactly. So if you had a friend who was going to be going or wanted to go to the Galapagos, is there any advice in particular you'd give them?
Oh, gosh. I think just, you know, keep an open mind. Don't bank on seeing any one type of wildlife, you know, because it's wildlife. You know, you might see the hammerheads, you might not. And then also I would say, too, if you're going to be doing a cruise, bring lots of seasickness tablets, even if you think you don't get seasick, because I did not think that I was someone that was prone to seasickness. And sure enough, the first day, I think it took a while for all of us to get our sea legs.
Okay, that sounds like very good advice because maybe people wouldn't have thought about that. When I was there, I did it land-based, so I don't think I had to deal with that except for some, you know, crossings to different islands. So I avoided that part. Well, this just sounds like you've had so many amazing trips.
Yeah, I really have. And I've been super fortunate, like I've said, to have these experiences.
So what do you have planned for the future?
So many. My list is very long at this point. I'm hoping that my next trip will be over to Central Asia to visit some of the stands like Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan. Of course, you know, like I said before, things are constantly changing right now in this environment. So whether or not I'm able to make it over there, we'll see. But that is somewhere that I really would love to go. I was actually supposed to go over to that region of the world in 2020 before things kind of shut down. So,
and would that be a trekking trip when it happens?
It might be. Yeah, there's definitely some hiking to do in that region. Yeah, there probably will be some of that, definitely.
And if that can't happen, what's your runner-up?
Oh, gosh. I also would love to go back down to South America to do Patagonia, to do the W Trek. That's another one that's quite high on my list. So might have to switch over to that if the Central Asia thing doesn't work out.
Yeah, the world's so big and there's so many exciting things to do and places to go and things to explore. So sometimes it's hard to make that decision.
It is, for sure. I find the more I travel, the longer my list gets of places I want to go.
I've actually heard many people say that, and it's absolutely true. I agree with you. In fact, last night I decided, you know, with the pandemic surging right now, oh, maybe what I do to focus my mind is just write myself a list of the things I want to do just to kind of, you know, maybe for hope as well. I found that fun, but I was thinking, oh, wow, I think I'm going to keep adding to this.
Exactly. Yeah, I find sometimes the research to do before a trip itself can sometimes be just as fun as the trip. I personally love doing research for trips to see, you know, what kind of things are out there. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's always fun. Well, it's just been so great chatting to you. I definitely want to go see the chimps, gorillas, and lemurs now. I've always wanted to do that, but you made me want to do it even more. So thanks so much.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. This was really fun.
Oh, it's really great. Now, if people wanted to see some of your photos or learn more about you, they can find you on Instagram. Is that right? And you're at Michelle L-E-T?
Yes. Yeah. So it's just my first name and then the first three letters of my last name.
Okay. And we'll put that in the show notes. And yeah, it was so great talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And keep traveling.
Yes, I will, for sure.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the 10 Adventures podcast. If you liked it, why not give us a review? Better yet, subscribe and get inspired again and again. Also, if you want to find your own adventures, why not check out 10adventures.com, where you can use our free resources to plan your own trip or book a tour in over 60 countries and make your own epic memories on your next adventure.